just heard a little bit of Razorback, played on a cigar box guitar by Mark Bishop, who was featured earlier in episode 16. The cigar box guitar used was made by my guest for this episode, Keith Nicholson. I suggest you refer to the show notes for this episode at stasisplace.com.au, as you'll find a number of links and pictures referred to in this conversation. Now, here's Keith Nicholson. I have with me today Keith Nicholson, who I know as a cigar box manufacturer. Is that the right term? Maker.
Yes, maker. It's a maker. I don't make that many to be called a manufacturer, but I do have made a few, yes.
Well, look, we'll get into that, but firstly, where does the Keith Nicholson story start?
Well, it starts back in New Zealand, where I grew up, and then my family immigrated out here to Australia back in 1969.
Oh, okay.
And then I went to finished school here, which is rather interesting because it was a completely different schooling arrangement in 1969 as opposed to New Zealand, which was stuck in about 1959.
Mate, I spent about 20 years in New Zealand, so and I actually went to school there for a small period of time. Timaru, I think I saw on Facebook. You were down the South Island, yeah?
Yes, I was down the South Island there. Grew up there. My father was a fireman, and also he was a automotive and mechanical engineer, and it was his job to maintain all the fire engines, the pumps, and all the equipment in between not fighting fires. And my mother, was, as at the time, was the domestic housewife, but she had a great interest in amateur theatre, and she was the wardrobe mistress for the local theatre company.
Ah, okay, okay. Varied background. So where did you go to school?
In New Zealand, it was Timaru Boys High School, probably the worst school ever. It was run along English public school lines, and the teachers all wore their academic gowns.
And I think they were still caning in those days, weren't they?
Yes. New Zealand ran on a system of violence in the schools.
Yes.
And then in 1969, in April, I came out to Pittwater High School up near Mona Vale, and that school had no history as such. It was not an old school tradition of any sort. It was just a newly built school. It had only been open a few years, and it was a co-ed school. And you can imagine in 1969, in the Northern Beaches, it was a completely different scene. And yeah,
it must have been quite a shock in many ways, coming from Timaru to the Northern Beaches.
Yeah, it was a very pleasant shock. It was very interesting, and very, very interesting times. And I worked at my father's service station at North Avalon and got to know quite a few of the people up that way. There was the surfing scene with guys like Midget Farrelly and Nat Young and the local North Avalon surfers.
Yes, yes.
And then there were people in the film and art industry.
Yes.
Up that way. One of my favourite customers at the service station was Winifred Atwell.
Oh, Winnie Atwell. My aunt used to love her. Yes.
Yeah, well, I used to have to service her little old Tirana HB, and before I could start to service it, I'd empty it out. It was a mobile ashtray, I'd empty out bags and bags and bags of cigarette butts and things. Then I'd clean the windscreens inside and out so I could see it. Then I'd service the thing and return it back to her up at Whale Beach, and it was very, very often I'd go return the car to her, and she would be practicing for some gig that she had. And her companion would say, "Well, Winifred's at the piano, let's have a cup of tea and cake and let her finish." So I virtually got treated to a free concert by Winifred overlooking Whale Beach.
Oh, that must be some great memories there, mate.
Yeah, it was. She was an amazing person and an incredible pianist. And just to sit there listening to a cup of tea and a piece of cake with her companion manager,
So it's
a memory I'll always treasure.
What a great opportunity that was.
Yeah. I wished I learned piano.
Oh, dear. So is that the sort of work you got into right at that stage, into mechanical engineering?
I used to work the forecourt fuel pumps, pumping fuel, cleaning windscreens, checking oil, and servicing the various cars and things from our customers. That was a load of fun because in that part of the world there was a whole range of different cars. You'd be working on old Taranas one moment, and the next someone would be bringing in their Citroen or their Porsche or their Jag.
Gee.
And or their Alfa Romeo, and then you'd be back to working on an old FJ Holden again. It was very interesting and varied.
And it's funny, somebody saw something on Facebook the other day that reminded me that. That was the days of the full service station.
Yep.
Like, you'd go and fill the car up and do the windscreen and check the tyres probably, and all in the... These days they just race in, you swipe your card and you're out again.
Yeah, well, the thing was with the full service is if I couldn't get at least once a day someone from the service to say, hey, you've got a bald tyre, or when was the last time your oil was changed, and get them into the workshop. Because that was the feeder to the workshop.
Yep, the upsell, yes.
Yeah, but it was quite entertaining.
So,
some of the things that you saw. And
did you go on with that, though, Keith? Is that the sort of line of work you made your career?
No, I've had... I did do work around the auto cars and things, and I probably had too many jobs to count. But I worked at the Commonwealth Bank at one stage. I worked on the New South Wales Railway replacing sleepers near Yass at another stage. I've been a courier. I still am a courier, actually, and also was a commercial estimator for a building company.
Okay.
Yeah, so jack of all trades, master of none, I think is the phrase.
Yes. And you're married, presumably?
Yeah, I'm married. I'm a retread. I'm to my second marriage now, so I'm referred to as a retread.
Or the first one was a practice one, yeah.
Yeah. And then I've got three children, two from the first marriage, both daughters. One's living up with her family near Foster, and the other one is near Launceston with her family.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a 25-year-old son who's now working at Sydney University. He just graduated with honours and 2 degrees and all the rest of it. Now he's got a job at the university.
Oh, okay. So what is he teaching or what?
No, he's working in a imaging facility that the Sydney University is setting up. And he's in designing protocols and ordering the machinery for MRIs and ultrasounds and X-rays and things for working on small animals.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting sort of field.
Yes. It keeps him busy, and he's one of the few lucky graduates who actually got a good-paying job.
Straight off.
Because apparently there's a lot of graduates who don't get the work they should deserve.
No, that's right. They all sort of go in with high hopes on going to be whatever, and they come out and not a lot of jobs there, really.
No. But he's the start of where my musical interests in building things musical came from.
That's what I was just going to go on to, because you did say in some of the photos you sent across that this was you made for your son. So I'm assuming he may have been the starting point for you to get into this. Have you always been into the blues and roots music?
Oh, I've been interested in the blues and roots music since I was about 14. I had an older brother and older sister who were into that music in the mid to late 60s.
Yes.
And they were, and one of the first records I bought was Skip James.
Okay.
And then, I've got a whole bunch of other blues music, and then went into the psychedelic type music, such as Country Joe and the Fish and stuff like that. So it's always been not mainstream music.
Well, it's. I think I'm much the same era, and we introduced to it from. Well, I was certainly from people like the Rolling Stones and the Beatles.
Well, I was introduced to by my brother's taste, and there wasn't so much the Rolling Stones, who were a great original blues band, but he and his friends were all into bands like the Segal Swall Band and Paul Butterfield and Mike Bloomfield and all of that type of stuff. And then when you dig behind that and found out where they got their music from,
yes,
it was all that Muddy Waters and
Brownie McGee and all those sort of guys.
Brownie McGee and Sonny Terry and
yes.
Big Bill Broonzy and all that. And you think, wow. And then meanwhile, on the radio, you were still hearing teeny weeny
polka dot
and you think, why are they
going on
this? Because to my mind, the American music of the late 50s, early 60s is what I call white bread picket fence music. It's so bland.
Yes, I know.
So it was in a reaction to that, that I think that the blues really got a kickstart from the UK invasion. And back in quiet little New Zealand, it just took off because it was an alternative to the very, very conservative society that we were in.
Well, exactly. And the... There's a, for me, I go back to the early Bill Haley and the Comets days, and then followed by Elvis Presley, who brought a bit of edge to it, and that really got me. And then it blanded out as it got more popular, and till the resurgence of things like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, who claimed a blues heritage, and as particularly the Rolling Stones, they really promoted.
They were huge. In fact, I'm looking forward to their next album due at the end of this year, which is basically a blues cover from the Rolling Stones.
Amazing that they're still going. Keith Richards,
I've got his autobiography around here. It's a great read.
Is it? Oh, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get back to your son. And he introduced you to cigar boxes. I'd never heard of them, I got to tell you, till I was talking to Mark Bishop. And he mentioned them, and, of course, through that mentioned you. And here we are talking. But I got to say, I'd never heard of them before this. Tell me, what is a cigar box guitar?
Well, firstly, my son wanted a bass guitar, and my wife, through her work, one of her colleagues was selling one that her son wasn't using, so we bought that, gave it to him, and then I built him a bass guitar based on a Fender jazz bass, and then later on I thought, yeah, well, building regular guitars is fine, but then I built one for my grandson, another bass guitar, who's on the autistic spectrum, and that really sort of helped him. But I was looking for something simpler because I'm no great carpenter. I sort of, at school, I didn't score too well in the woodwork department, but I came across the cigar box guitar, and I thought, I could build those.
Well, it's amazing. You just amazed me by saying casually, oh, yeah, I just made my son, he wanted a bass guitar, so I just made him one. I thought, hang on, you don't sit down and just make a bass guitar. You must have some sort of skills, you know.
Yeah, but I don't make them from scratch. What I call myself as an assembler. I get all the component bits in and then stick them all together.
Okay.
And then, because, like I said, I was never a great shakes in the woodworks department. But the trick is, in any instrument, you've got to know how to set it up.
Yes.
So once you give it to him, okay, tell me what's wrong with it. What do you need doing? The action's too high, or the neck's not on the. And you go, okay, back to square one and start again until you get it right. I made the first one, which I still got. I loaned it to Mark for a length of time, and he played it. And then I've since retrieved it back, and now it's with my son.
Right.
And he plays it, but I use it as a bass experimental. And try ideas out on it.
Okay.
And then I thought, okay, I've got that one sort of down pat. It still needs a bit of fine-tuning because I've learnt since then. of the finer points. But there's a saying in the cigar box community that there are no rules, which is not quite correct. There are two rules. The thing's got to be playable and the thing's got to be tunable.
Yes, of course.
Otherwise, it's a wall hanger.
Yeah.
But apart from that, anything else goes. Yeah, so I built the first one, and Mark used it for a while and told me what he liked and didn't like about it. So then I put together the one that Mark's now got, and he loves it.
Okay.
That one was actually a failed build by somebody else in Pensacola, Florida. He bought all these bits and didn't complete it, and he put it on eBay. So I got it for real cheap, even for the shipping. And then I assembled it, modified it, put it together, found out that the pickup that came with it didn't work. So there's a guy in Austria who builds really beautiful pickups. So I put one of his in it, and that's what gives the sound that Mark has now. And then I put it all together and set it up, gave it to Mark, and said, "Okay, what does it need doing to suit you?" And he told me, so I modified it to suit, then gave it to him, and then I also at the same time gave him a little overdrive pedal that a guy makes in China, and they little valve driven thing, and absolutely screams with that. So I put it all together and gave it to Mark.
So an overdrive pedal. What is an overdrive pedal?
You heard Mark play that one, I think.
Yes, well, we're going to lead in with that, I think. The razor blade thing off his album is, I'm pretty sure, is the cigar box.
That's it, yes. It's unplugged, it gives a really quite a clean, crisp sound. And then when you put the overdrive pedal onto it, it gives it that really distorted, twisted growl to the
To it. A bit like the quiver bar on a guitar that used to be popular in the early days.
Overdrives extends the notes and the tremolos and things. Yeah, it all twists the sounds around. But anyway, that was that one.
Okay.
And then as an experimental, I built a Canjo.
A Canjo.
Which is basically
a banjo made out of a can.
Well, a single stringed. And it's got a tin can on one end as an echo box. And it's a single string, and it's tuned like it doesn't have the frets like a regular guitar. It's tuned like a dulcimer. So each thing is an actual note scale, but it's not like a fret, a fretted arrangement where you've got to chase chords around the place.
Well, it's only one string,
quite simple. Yeah, and that was an experimental. I built a diddly bow, which is another single-stringed instrument, which I used to test out concepts and ideas of pickups.
Okay.
And mounting them just to see how they sound and various things, because the diddly bow itself is a constant. And I'd place a different pickup under it to see if there's any difference between any pickups that I use.
That's just a
test bed item.
Yes.
Then after that, friend of Callum, who's Tom Hume, they were in the same band together called The Rider with another guy called Henry Manuel. And I built my son one I called the Bligmaster, which is that really shiny polished one with all, which is at the moment I've now loaned to Mark. because I bring them back to do modifications as required and keep them working. And the other guy, Tom Hume, he's a really gifted player. He can play almost anything. He plays piano, drums, guitars, whatever. I built him one for his 21st, which is the little Tabasco tin lid resonator
on an old
Cuban, 60-year-old Cuban box. And that's got an old Strat neck that's been defretted, six string, and it's designed for slide, but he wanted a finger pick, so I had to re-alter the action to suit. so he could finger pick it as well as slide it. Gee. And that sounds quite amazing. But that has a Spanish Mexican theme right through it. And it's quite a pleasant banjo sound attached to that one. Beyond that, I've got commissions to build a few more.
Okay.
But all rather interesting how people react to it. I've watched people, when Mark plays it, he'll be playing his other guitars and people think, oh, yeah, that's a guitar, that's a nice resonator, that's a lovely... And then he pulls out the cigar box guitar and people go, what the hell's that? And it's really quite amazing to see the reaction. I get quite a chuckle out of it.
Yeah.
It's quite enjoyable to see someone who knows how to play one of our instruments and see the reaction of the audience. So that gives me quite a lot of joy.
Yeah, I bet it does. I should point out, and you said in some of the notes that we had, that you actually don't play a note yourself. You've never learned to play your guitar or
never learned to play any instrument.
So how do you tune them and stuff? You obviously know how to tune them and stuff. Yeah.
There's modern applications that you get on your phone or buying. Apparently Leo Fender couldn't play a guitar either.
Is that right?
Apparently.
Gee.
Yeah. And talking to other cigar box builders around the place and online, quite a few of them don't play or just know how to play a few basic tunes. They just prefer to build them.
Yeah, and I suppose there's a skill that's required to do the building and there's a skill required to play them, and they don't necessarily go together.
No, that's true.
Horses for courses, as they say.
There was an old Italian racing car designer and builder. He says, I just build them, I'll let others kill themselves.
Do you know where the cigar box guitars originated? I'm guessing they're a homemade instrument out of the South, but would I be wrong?
You'll be pretty close to the mark. They date back to around about 1850, 1860 odd.
Okay.
Before then, cigars were packed in barrels and shipped. Everything was packed in barrels and shipped, from gunpowder to molasses.
Mm-hmm.
You can almost say that the barrel, up until the invention of the tin can, was the equivalent of the Greek amphora. Everything was packed and shipped in it.
Mm-hmm.
Then around about 1850, 1860, they started to pack them in little cedar boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And the American Civil War came along and nobody could buy anything, basically, but the people still smoked cigars, and basically out of a length of wood in a cigar box and length of wire scrounged up from anywhere, that became the first of the diddly bows and stuff like that in a box, and then one or two strings, maybe three strings, were added. And they were always an instrument made out of necessity, because no one could afford to buy a real instrument.
Mm.
And that's where they started. So they were an instrument of the folk and also of the plantation slave and all of that. And that's where it started from.
Mm.
And then from there, they survived. And every time there was a depression, downturn in the economy, they'd have a revival. And they had a revival right through and into the Depression. And Bo Diddley was probably the most famous for using a box guitar. And
Bo Diddley.
Bo Diddley, yeah. Well, he gets his name from Diddley Bo.
Yeah, it's just a swap around, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But and then around about 20-odd years ago, they had a revival. There was a guy called Shane Spiel, who's the self-styled king of the cigar box. He was building them about 20 years ago. And then Justin Johnson, he got introduced to them, and he's taken a huge interest. He also is the self-styled wizard of the cigar box guitar, but he plays a whole bunch of different home-built instruments. There's some made on a barometer frame from 1800s, and another one he plays is basically a shovel with strung up, and it sounds a bit different again. and he plays a whole bunch of other stuff as well. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of people out there building them, and it's all good fun because the community itself is free to swap ideas. They're not jealously, closely guarding their secrets. They'll quite happily tell you how they did something, and it's really quite a nice community.
Yeah, it is, and I've just scratched the surface of it with some of, you mentioned CB Giddy as a company in the States. Giddy, yeah. I guess, is short for guitar.
That's correct,
Cigar box Giddy's, you know. Massive site, and yeah, you're right. It's like there isn't a commercial side to this other than somebody like CB Giddy's selling parts and stuff like that, but is there a Stradivarius of the cigar box business?
No, there isn't, but there are some very, very well-respected makers of them.
Mm. Keith Nicholson comes to mind.
Oh, I've only ever made a handful, but some of the guys, there's a guy called Shane Soule at Nyakandanda who really makes a lovely line of simple, elegant, and beautifully set up instruments. But I saw him a couple of weeks ago and visited him, and he's an absolutely lovely guy. He makes these cigar box guitars for sale, but he will take commissions for specials.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of guys up the Blue Mountains that do them. There's one guy, Maple Grove, Richard Keegan. He made a metal-based biscuit tin with a Harley Davidson on it, which Chris O plays, and it's an absolutely lovely piece of equipment.
Oh, okay.
And there's quite a few others around. There's a guy in Tasmania who makes, the other one that Mark has, it's a six-string cigar box guitar, and his name is Bruce Trapp from Devil Guitars. And he makes something else called a Train Smash. He's up to his number six on that. And that's a real Heath Robinson contraption that makes music. And it's totally steampunk.
Oh, amazing. I'm going to have a pile of links in the show notes for this episode. I can see that coming.
Yeah. But in the meantime, if you make a guitar and you got and it's amplified, you've got to run it through an amplifier. So I also made a couple of little amps. One was a valve amp, and it's really sweet-sounding and easy to make. But I could put in a plug for him. It was by Grant Wills of Valve Heaven,
right.
And a little Lamington amp, 15-watt. And it sounds like a really good old-school vintage valve amplifier, and I made one of those.
Gee.
You've got to be careful making those things. They have high voltage.
And where did you learn all of that stuff, the electrical work involved?
I just read a lot.
Self-taught?
Read a lot, figure it out. I've always had an inquisitive, inquiring mind when it comes to anything that's trains, planes, automobiles, motorcycles, steam engines, anything
yes.
that moves. And also I like the intricate, like some of the clockwork mechanisms and things. I can pull them apart, but I can never put them back together, though.
No, that's another skill altogether, I guess.
Yeah.
So cigar boxes are probably not in plentiful supply at the moment. So it sounds like there are a whole lot of other pieces that are made, used to go into this. So how many are acoustic and how many are electric?
Most of them are acoustic with either a little pickup in them or a piezo pickup, which is just picks up on vibration rather than an electrical current and converts vibration into an electrical current. Some of them that are I think the one that Mark got from Bruce Trapp from Devil Guitars is purely an electric one because it's got basically a solid body wrapped in a cigar box.
Mm, yeah.
But most of them tend to have an acoustic element as the primary, and then they just run to amplify it. But cigar boxes themselves, I see people looking at alternatives now because the latest cigar box I picked up the last couple of days are all a lightweight cardboard, and they're all government-approved plain packaging with pictures of dead people with toe tags on them and stuff like that, just like a cigarette packet.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
So there's the end of that era, I guess.
There's the end of that era. There's still enough boxes kicking around at the moment, but people will be making their own boxes and then maybe engraving or labelling them to make them look like cigar boxes, or looking at alternatives. Biscuit tin boxes make for a lovely sound. That's the one that Richard Egan made for Chris O, and I'm based on a Harley Davidson biscuit tin, and he made himself a tin one based on an old Weet-Bix tin from the sanitarium factory.
Okay.
And I've got a vintage fruit box. Had a fruit box cake in it.
Okay.
Made in Melbourne from a cake factory down there that makes fruit cakes. And it's a beautiful box. And I've reserved that one for a friend of mine, Jasmine Beth. And I've just managed to scrounge the parts, because everything I try and use, I try and scrounge. But on a sidewalk pickup, I found a silver-plated cake server, a grave cake server. So that matches it. And that'll become the tailpiece for it.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and I've got a couple of other commissions that I need to get onto. I've got a cigar box from Cuba for Crystal Barak, who's of Queen Porter Stomp. And I'm building one that for her, plus a similar one in a four-string standard length, as well as a ukulele. And I've got another uke to build for Mark Bishop out of a California chocolate box that he had at school for his school pencil case.
Oh, gee. So they all have a story, don't they?
They all have a story, and I like to build something that's sort of got a theme to it.
Yes.
Like the tenny ute that I'm building for Crystal from Queen Porter Stomp. She has a song called Hannah Havana, which suits the cigar box from Havana.
Right.
And so it sort of fits. I try and get things to tie in and fit. The very first one that I built has a theme. It's got a domino which represents Gaines that covers one of the pickups. It's got a coin in the back of it which holds the jack plate, represents money, Donald Gaines, a musical instrument, cigars which themselves represent one of the seven deadly sins, I guess. And the knobs on the side are rifle cartridges, and one of them is a 3220 Winchester cartridge, which references a Robert Johnson song.
Yeah, we got the photo of that, haven't we, with the cartridges on the end.
Yeah. So you just try to run a theme through a guitar. A lot of builders try to keep it to a theme. Some of them really like hanging decorations of skulls and other sort of gothic themes off them. Some others really do a lovely steampunk. And others like celebrating American whiskies and Confederate flags.
Yes.
Depends on where your head's at.
Yep. So you obviously follow the blues and roots scene pretty closely, yeah?
Is that,
that
I
just
do.
A passion rather than... And the CBG stuff is just a sideline, really, isn't it, to your real passion?
Yeah, it is, but it's a load of fun.
Of course.
And meeting other like-minded individuals and then is a load of fun too. And it's a nicely spread out community. I think there's at least a dozen guitar box builders I know of in Australia, and just probably another 100 more. Yeah, it's not a real big thing, and I don't think it'll ever become mainstream.
No. No, there's no real money in it either, I don't think. Although specialist type stuff, there is still probably some money. Is it something that you make a bit out of, or You do a lot of it for
love? No, I make nothing. I make nothing. Just do it for the love.
Yeah?
Even the instruments that I have sold, it was just a break-even point.
For the cost of the parts and stuff. Yeah.
The cost of the parts, the labour, and the thinking about it. But one of the most the interesting builds was the cigar box fiddle.
Oh, that's right, yes.
And, I thoroughly enjoyed building that, but I got stalled because I've never built one before. I've never hardly picked up a violin.
Yes.
And I asked my son, Callum, do you know anyone who plays violin? And at that point he said, nah. So I put it on the back burner.
Mm.
And then sometime later, he meets this lovely lady, Hannah, who went to Newcastle University, did music in violin, and also had a job part-time to pay her fees in a violin shop helping setting up violins.
Ah.
What a perfect girlfriend.
Yes, yes, for you.
And she's a lovely, charming young woman, and she knows how to talk to crusty old farts like me.
Yeah. Did she?
So she explained to me what needed doing, and then she hand-carved me a bridge for it, which I promptly snapped, so I used that one as a pattern to make another one and put it all together. That was my dog burping. and then put it all together, and she told me how to string it up and set the correct action height and angles and things. And then I sold that to a guy who lives at Araya Park in central New South Wales near Wagga. And he plays, he's done it for about a year now, and he plays it at church and also at the local gigs around that area. And I thought it sounded better than a square box should.
Gee, okay. And does it come across as a violin? Does it sound like a violin?
It sounds like a violin. I think there's a link that I might have sent you on it.
Yes, I've got a picture of it, yes.
I think there's a video as well. If you haven't got it, I'll send it.
Okay, okay. So, okay, well, that'd be good. So the listeners could go and have a look at the video and see how it sounds. Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, yeah. But, right. Well, at the moment, my current build is a strat-type parts caster for my son,
right,
which I'm working on. And I've got the fruit box one for Jasmine Beth. I've got a five-stringer for Henry Manuel, who was in the same band that my son and Tom were in. That's going to be an industrial punk one, experimental, based on everything I could salvage out of microwave ovens.
It'll make you a cup of coffee at the same time.
Well, someone built one using the actual base of the actual cabinet of a microwave. But that looks rather unwieldy, so it's got but this one's just using the components and stuff inside. Because I found out that inside microwaves there's a whole bunch of stuff. There's little relays that you can use to make pickups out of and all sorts of things, and little grills and the wheels that turn the table around, the plate around inside, would make for a lovely set of knobs. So, yeah.
Oh, mate, this is fascinating. So, everything's reused, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, because I'm really not interested in building to sell to the market, because there's too many other great builders out there doing that already.
Yeah.
So I just prefer to build one-off and strange, never the same twice.
Yeah, exactly.
And using as much salvage and recyclable. There are other builders doing the same, and we all sort of kick around and swap ideas.
Oh, it sounds like a marvellous community, Keith. Well, we're going to keep in touch, mate, and we may well get back together on the air fairly shortly. So thank you for your time today.
No problem, Mike.
I'm just in awe of what you're doing. It's fabulous. And we'll have more about that later, I think. So,
okay, then.
Thank you very much, Keith, and thank you for your time, and we'll keep in touch, please.
We'll do. Look forward to it. Thank you.
Thanks, mate. Bye.
Bye.
And that's it for this episode of the Stasis Place podcast. I hope you enjoyed hearing Keith Nicholson's story. Please refer to the show notes for this episode at stasisplace.com.au, as you'll find a number of links and pictures referred to in our conversation. I would also love to hear any comments you may have about this or any other episode by leaving them on either the website or on iTunes or on Stitcher. You can also contact me on Twitter at StaceAlive. Thanks for listening, folks. Bye for now.